Welcome to episode 58. I'm Stuart McCullough, I'm the CEO of VHAA. And starting with this week's industrial roundup, and in particular with community health as they continue their way through an intense year of bargaining. In terms of the allied health professionals, the parties are continuing to engage in interest-based bargaining with the assistance of the Fair Work Commission. The parties are due back in conference on the 12th of April before the Fair Work Commission. With respect to medical scientists, and health and allied services staff, we are finalising proposals to issue to members for their review and comment. Those proposals for settlement have been developed with the assistance of the community health subgroup. With respect to our health service members, and thank you to all those members who have provided suggestions in terms of the key implementation issues for the doctors' agreements. Those implementation issues will now appear on the implementation tracker, and we'll be working through those in the coming months. With respect to biomedical engineers, the parties are now meeting on a weekly basis with a schedule of meetings. We are next scheduled to meet with them on the 19th of April. Details with regards to those meetings will be posted on the VHA community app. In terms of health and allied, we are due to host the Health Workers Union and DHHS on the 11th of April for a Service Delivery Partnership Plan working group meeting. In terms of dentists, on the 11th of April, we have met with representatives of Professionals Australia to progress bargaining for that agreement. And in terms of medical scientists, on the 10th of April, we hosted the Medical Scientists EBA Reference Group meeting. This week we are also scheduled on Friday to meet with the Rural Health Service Senior Nurse Executive Group. As always, all our activities are summarised through the VHA community app. Simply go onto the app and select the groups you're interested in to get the feed that is relevant to you. And that's it for this week's Industrial Roundup. Welcome to the weekly update, where we go in depth with a particular subject. Today we're joined by Professor Kelsey Hegarty from the University of Melbourne and the Royal Women's Hospital to discuss the Strengthening Hospital Responses to Family Violence Initiative. Kelsey is the Joint Chair in Family Violence Prevention for those two organisations. Kelsey, welcome.
Thank you.
So first things first, you're described as the joint chair. I'm just using a regular chair today. What's a joint chair?
It is a funny term. It usually means that you've got a special professor role. This was created about 18 months ago by the joining together of my University of Melbourne role and the Royal Women's Hospital, seeing the need for leadership in research in family violence prevention, and I was very honoured and excited to accept it.
Just in terms of the research aspect and some of your background, I understand that you've done a significant amount of research in the issue of preventing violence against women.
Yes, so I'm a general practitioner by trade, still practice as well, and it struck me that everybody was talking about domestic and family violence, and really I didn't see that many people. So I started on a research career that started with saying how common it was in clinical practice, and then also seeing the health effects. And then I've gone on to develop interventions to identify family violence early and respond in a way that assists with safety and healing.
So going on to the Strengthening Hospital Responses to Family Violence Initiative, this is something that I think some members will have an acute awareness of, some will have heard of it but have yet to turn their mind to it. Just in an overview sense, could you summarise what that initiative is?
So it's a really good example of a whole of hospital response to family violence that was recommended by the Victorian Royal Commission. And really, when we say that, you might think about at the patient level that we need to be identifying and responding like I was talking about before. But really, it needs to be at multiple levels across the hospital to solve this wicked problem. So at an organisational level, you need strong leadership and governance, and the Royal Women's Hospital has been leading the development of the Strengthening Hospital Response to Family Violence. And that involves, as well as just leading and governing and showing the way, it also is changing the organisational environment so that it's a safe, welcoming environment for patients to come in who've experienced domestic and family violence. And obviously that takes some infrastructure and environmental changes. But then we've got a really important element, the staff element, that I think we'll talk more about today, that really is where how can we expect our staff to be supporting patients without supporting our staff, with clear policies and procedures, and also connections to referrals and support. And as I said, the final level is the patient level, where we need to provide patient-centred care that's empathic and non-judgmental.
So I do want to pick up on those two elements separately, the staff level as well as the patient level. But just to put the family violence into context, first of all, what do the statistics tell us with regards to the prevalence and severity of family violence within our communities?
So the commonest form of family violence is intimate partner violence, often known as domestic violence. And we know from Australian national figures that one in six women have experienced domestic violence by their partner, and one in 17 men. So it is a gendered issue. It is something that women are more likely to experience than men, but men, of course, can still experience it. And it can also happen in same-sex relationships. Now, of course, the term family violence means that it can also happen. Abuse and violence can be by other family members. So it can be an in-law, or it can be an uncle, or a stepfather, or things like that, not just between partners. So the term family violence encompasses all members of the family and abuse and violence. And once you include those, then the level is higher. But it's still obviously an extremely common condition that is a real impact on health in our society.
So once you take into account that broader family context, it's a higher prevalence than one in six.
Yeah, and we haven't been very good at measuring that other family violence, but it's a really important aspect of it.
So family violence is prevalent within communities.
Yes.
What challenges does that pose for health services as the provider of health services to patients?
Well, the first thing is that people who work within the health system are exactly the same as the community to some great extent. They actually experience it themselves, and we know that from figures overseas and here, that in fact it's probably as prevalent in our staff as it is in the patients who attend. The other important thing is that, as you've noticed over the last decade, there's been a real push for hospitals and health systems to respond to this sensitive issue. And here we are saying to people who may have experienced it themselves, please could you respond to patients who've experienced it? So it is an area where it's sensitive, and it can be where we need to be careful in the way that we approach it. I think the thing that is important for hospitals to know is that in fact often a health professional is the first professional that women tell. So particularly if they can see signs that it's safe and that they trust the person in front of them because they have good communication skills. So they tell family and friends first, but then health professionals are the next are the highest professional.
It's a really interesting point about the organisational preparedness, both in terms of preparing the
Absolutely.
Staff and preparing the environment in which people can feel comfortable to have that discussion.
Yes.
In terms of that discussion that a health professional may have, it would be something I would take that requires a degree of preparation that we can't rely on it being a matter of instinct in order to get the best outcome.
Yes, because they're not trained in their undergraduate or even in their postgraduate degrees, so it's not had the level of impact in their training courses. So often, if I ask a room full of health professionals, none of them will have had any training. But I do find that it's something that they can learn quite easily. And it's really around giving them the language of how to ask sensitively, how to inquire sensitively, to not be saying, are you a domestic violence victim, because people just know, you know, but to be asking about whether they feel afraid of their partner, whether they feel safe to go home, and then to go on and say, we ask everybody a series of questions around, have you been physically hurt or threatened to be hurt? And those direct questions are more likely to elicit disclosure. And then there's been a really good development by the World Health Organization as to how people should respond once they hear a disclosure. And it's a mnemonic called LIVES. And it's really simple. It's listening deeply to hear what they say, inquiring about their needs, validating their experience, enhancing their safety, and offering ongoing support within the organisation. So the practitioner themselves may not be necessarily trained or equipped, but they need to know where to assist a patient or a staff member who discloses.
It's really interesting that is potentially that there is a training gap in the sense of the training to become the health professional doesn't cover that off, and it's something that needs to be addressed as part of that response. Yes. So turning back to the initiative itself and the fact that the materials that are supporting that initiative are now in their third edition.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of the development of those materials, how has that developed to edition number three?
I think the key features were initially people were developing training programs to just get that health professional patient connection of how you would speak to someone and what you would do. Very quickly it was realised that exactly what you said, you need to have an organisational readiness and you need a staff readiness to be able to undertake this work. So over the three editions it's developed, and in the latest edition particularly a focus on the workplace support and how you need to do that. And it's got modules that are about how you develop the leadership and governance that I was talking about, how you develop your policy and procedures, how you develop a cultural change within an organisation, and then how you actually go about the business of training and speaking directly to patients who disclose and staff who disclose.
I find it interesting that as an initiative, it's in that continuous improvement model.
Yes.
That it is growing and developing further as things are learned.
Yes, and there's a lovely community of practice of everybody who's involved in the Strengthening Hospital Response to Family Violence, and they all exchange ideas and connect people together all across the state as to how to, I'm doing this or I'm doing this, and how they help each other. It's great.
So just a couple of the things that you mentioned there, and in particular I wanted to pick up the underlying principles behind the initiative. Mm. And starting with the first issue in terms of respect and gender equity and the importance of that principle as an underlying principle for the response.
Yes, and I think there's two aspects to that. One is that we know from the work by Our Watch, the prevention agency in Australia, that one of the main drivers is around gender equity. The second around the respect is really that we need to be changing our organisations to be respectful, safe organisations. You cannot do this work if you were being bullied or sexually harassed, or you don't have an organisation that supports you if you are experiencing family violence yourself. So that respect within an organisation needs to be fundamentally there, as well as processes that are gender equitable, and that people understand those two principles are so important to this work.
It's interesting in the context of family violence and it being a predominantly gendered issue, and that really does connect to the idea of a whole of hospital response. That is, you're looking to get an organisational understanding as opposed to pockets of understanding within the organisation.
Yes, and I think that we've done the same thing with other chronic physical and mental health conditions. We don't just go and train someone about an individual thing. This is a chronic social condition that is really the leading contributor to ill health for women of childbearing age. So it's got major effects on people's health, both the staff and the patients. So it's really important that these areas that are complex, needing complex care, whether it's physical health, mental health, or this social health problem, really need a complex solution across the organisation.
So if the first underlying or underpinning principle goes to the issue of respect and gender equity, the second principle in terms of sensitive practice, and what does sensitive practice mean in this context?
So it means that you have a deep understanding that when you're approaching this issue, you have to approach it in a non-judgmental way, and that the same as you have to be ready to do the work, the patient may not be ready to disclose to you. So you have to approach it in a sensitive way with questions that I spoke about before, but also realising that it's okay if people disclose and they don't want to do something about it right at that moment. They actually have maybe other needs in their life, and that they are managing it as best they can.
That might be a bit challenging for health workers, whose instinct might be find the problem and then move on to resolving it.
Yeah, when I do this often with medical students, I do a lot of training. They just want to take the person home and protect them from this, person is using violence. But in many ways, women, and I'll use that term because it is often women, we need to trust them in the way that they go about their business and their assessment of their fear and safety issues. We're there to help them, and we give them information to make decisions, but we shouldn't be pressurising them to leave, because that's often a dangerous time for women, and they can be often killed at that time. So it's really important, as I said, the first in lives is listen and then inquire about needs. But actually say this is not acceptable as well, because of course many women and men who experience this normalise it.
So the materials that support the initiative talk about five elements. And the first element that's identified is a commitment from leadership and steps to create and maintain momentum. I suspect it's no accident that that's element number one.
Yes.
What does that mean in practical terms?
Well, the women's is a good example. I think for 15 years they've been doing this violence against women work, and during that time they've put in place key strategies, key committees that support it. They've had elements of clinical champions or people within the system who speak up about it. There's been advocates on policy levels to get the infrastructure funding. There's been an ability to change the environment. So you really need those things in place, because if you're someone who's passionate about this area but you're not getting any support from your CEO or from your, very senior people, then that's really tough work for you. So the process is to put in place to convince people that this is a health issue within their organisation is really the first step.
One of the interesting things for me in visiting VHA members is the degree to which more and more organisations have made their declaration, made their position clear. There are some health services where the first thing that you see when you walk into the health service is the declaration of a commitment against family violence, or on the front lawn. We're just going to pop up a picture now, which is of the town of Warwick-Nabil.
Oh, yeah.
And as you drive into the town of Warwick-Nabil, there is a statement there with regards to the prevention of family violence. It also tells you that it's the birthplace of Nick Cave. It does make it look as though Nick Cave is somehow involved in that initiative, but I believe that they're separate.
Yes.
But it's been interesting to note that change that's beginning to occur across health services more generally. So moving on to the second element in terms of the model, laying a foundation for success and what that might mean.
Yes, so the next step is really having very clear policies and procedures that trickle down from that leadership and governance. So people need to understand their roles. They really need to have clear ways to navigate the system within the hospital and externally to be able to do that.
So that sounds like a framework for almost assessing the local environment and potential impediments.
That's right.
And In terms of the third element, it talks about the building of capability and capacity. Hmm. And what's involved in that kind of building of capability and capacity.
Okay, so again, that's at two levels, for managers to be able to respond to disclosures, which is the workplace support program part, for HR to have an understanding about what's required for domestic violence leave, and also for resources to be in place, and also the fact that there's referral to the employee assistance programs that are in existence, and they're all trained and ready to go. So everybody's capable, you know, in that responding to disclosures for managers and for of staff. And then the patient level is mirrored in that we need the policies and procedures and documentation and ability to refer on at a patient level.
What's interesting about that for me is that nothing is left to intuition. It requires the building of capacity, the training to be ready, to know what to do under the circumstance and not leaving things to chance.
That's right. I think that when, one-off training is not a sustainable way. We need these systems in place so that when new graduates come in, there's an ability to look at the modules in the Strengthening Hospital Response to Family Violence, to look at the policies and procedures, to have people within the system who have been trained and dealt with disclosures and feel confident and know what to do.
The role of confidence, that's an interesting one. How important is confidence in this field?
Look, I think people are frightened of it. That, you know, I liken it to suicide 10 years ago, where we all thought, oh, as a clinician, if you asked about suicide, that might be, you know, not so good. It's similarly with this, that it's a new area. It's been put on the community radar by, you know, Australian of the Year, Rosie Batty, everybody. It's on people's lips. And then it's just saying it's okay to ask. And it's okay to not know exactly what to do, but you need to know where to go to help that person in front of you, and whether that's a staff member or a patient.
The fourth element that was referred to in the model was building partnerships. What's the importance of building partnerships, and with whom?
Yeah, so internally within a hospital, and obviously some hospitals are very small, but I'll give the example of the Women's Hospital. There are an array of people involved, not just HR and the Strengthening Hospital Response to Family Violence team for the workplace support, but also thinking about what areas it touches on. And the indicators of family violence go across every single segment of a hospital, really. And the thing is that there are experts often with sexual violence, with Centres Against Sexual Assault. There's mental health experts within hospitals. There are social work is a very strong, shows leadership in this area. Now, all these people need to work together internally, and it has to be really clear where people need to go in that system. But then, of course, we have externally, we have state-based organisations like Safe Steps. We have national-based organisations like 1-800-RESPECT. All these have resources. And so it has to be clear that it's good to have even memorandums of understanding with local organisations or state-based organisations that can assist with working together. You know, they're specialists in the area, and mostly we're generalists in the area in hospitals or in general practice. So we're working together to help people.
So people health services don't need to make the assumption that they should have the capacity to deal with everything internally. Partnerships, connections with other organisations.
Absolutely. To be encouraged. And the reason I say that is that people's needs are diverse, and they may or may not want to accept that referral in the hospital system. They may prefer to go out into the community. So it's just doing a wraparound. So as they say, no wrong door. No.
And in terms of the fifth element, creating an evidence base, yes. What does that do, and what's the importance of creating an evidence base?
Well, it employs me. No. It's very important that, and I'm sure many of the audience would know, that when you're creating system change like this, there are probably two elements, and one of them was relationship building that we just spoke about, but this second one is a reflective system. And so we need to be feeding back how all these systems are going, because all these changes are going, because then you can, like you said earlier, do quality assurance and improve things and increase the ability of the organisation to give a better response. We had an honour student recently interview some managers who'd undergone the training at Royal Women's Hospital, and just that small study she did has fed back into the women's to improve the workplace support program.
So that covers the five elements that are part of the model. Just in terms of the key people for driving and implementing a model within an organisation, who do those people tend to be?
So obviously at the moment there's a set of funding that has developed strengthening hospital response to family violence people who are a mixture of backgrounds, some clinical, some social work, some HR, and they all need to work together with key players across the organisation, local clinical roles, and also the leadership team. So it's really that you need that whole of hospital response working together for this to be implemented.
It's interesting. So much within hospitals and health services are segmented.
Yes.
And we're accustomed to a segmented approach, but it's interesting to that success in this area really does depend on leadership commitment, training, whole of hospital, and an organisational understanding of the underpinning principles. Kelsey, thank you for taking us through through that initiative. I understand that there are materials that are available to all health services and community health centres. We'll put the address there up on the screen. It's the Have Your Say website through the women's website, and that contains a full range of materials to help support the implementation of the Strengthening Hospital Responses to Family Violence initiative. We'll also put up some contact details that for those people who are in need of additional support for their response to patients. If they're in a rural and regional area, that support is being provided by Bendigo Health. If they're a metropolitan hospital, that support is provided through the Royal Women's. In addition to that, the Royal Women's is also providing support to hospitals across the state in terms of their workforce response and the support for that. So very much encourage members to make that contact to ensure that they successfully implement that initiative. The key contact point at the Royal Women's is Georgia Shepherd.
And I'd just like to add that if there are people out there who are survivors of family violence, I think it's really important for you to reach out for help. Some of the online resources at Domestic Violence Resource Centre Victoria, at Safe Steps, the crisis support agency in Victoria, or 1800 RESPECT, all of those places have really good information. And we are really saying to you that if you trust your organisation, it's moving forward with this area, that it's really a place to talk about this issue.
So thank you very much for joining us today.